I was grateful she'd already swallowed her coffee, for she would have spit it out like a cartoon character. For a pig?
A pig owned by a princess?
Danny winked and then grinned. Tara felt an unexpected flush of pleasure. Are you saying the business doesn't even have 10,000 euro on the books?
We do, but it took a bite.
Johnny didn't like to reach into his pocket. The theft had him bonkers. The morning they were to meet, I believe Johnny intended on giving Emmett his money back.
You believe?
Danny nodded.
I did my best to convince him. I told him we'd figure out a way to make up for the loss. I assumed he was going to take my advice, but...
But? Emmett Walsh was one of our best customers. He was threatening to ruin our reputation if he didn't get his pig. He didn't want the money back. He wanted his precious item. Her uncle would have been stressed, desperate even. What happened that morning?
There was a note on the door to the mill that morning. Someone very upset with my uncle. I told the guards, but by the time they came to check it out, it was gone.
She quoted the note and waited to see how he would react. Danny looked thoughtful.
Sounds like it could have been Emmett, all right.
Did Emmett live close to the mill?
Not too far of a drive.
How long?
Danny raised an eyebrow. 40 minutes, I'd say.
That was way too long for Emmett to have gone home to type the note.
Was Sergeant Gable right? Had Emmett anticipated trouble and typed the note ahead of time? She filled Danny in on her thoughts.
Ah, that's why you were asking after a typewriter.
Tara nodded.
Doesn't seem believable that Emmett would drive home to get that note.
Either way, note or no note, Johnny had been expecting Emmett. So much for Emmett taking Johnny by surprise and Johnny killing him in self-defense.
A thought suddenly occurred to Tara. She turned to Danny.
If you had quit already, how do you know Johnny and Emmett planned to meet that morning?
Chapter 7. Danny's head snapped up. He looked as if she had caught him doing something untoward.
I came to see him the day before. I was supposed to pick up my last check.
I thought he didn't write checks.
It's a turn of phrase. I stopped to pick up my earnings.
The friendly tone was guarded now. Tara wondered if Johnny had paid Emmett. Would the guards find 10,000 euro in the dead man's pockets?
Did you tell any of this to the police?
Tell any of what?
That Johnny had been expecting Emmett that morning, and he was going to give him his money back instead of the pig?
Danny shook his head.
Do you think it's important?
I'm sure it will be. Until the murder is solved, everything will be important.
Danny exhaled. They haven't come knocking yet.
That's because they were too busy blaming Johnny for the murder, or her. And Danny's story didn't help her uncle's case. He'd known Emmett was coming. If he had wanted to attack him, he had time to plan it out. There were plenty of items in the warehouse that could have been used to bash someone in the head. She shuddered just thinking about it.
Is that why you quit?
Tara asked.
Because he accused you of stealing?
Danny stared at her for a long time. Was he angry? Should she not have asked? He stood abruptly. The chair scraped the patio.
I have to walk Johnny's dog.
His dog?
I guess he's your dog now.
Tara stood as Danny let out a loud whistle.
I can't take a dog. I'm only visiting. I'm staying at an inn. I can't take a dog.
Just then, a small horse-like animal trotted onto the patio. He had creamy white fur that was sticking out in every direction, wide eyes and perked-up ears.
This? Tara said, pointing at the beast before her.
That's not a dog. That's a hairy pony.
A sexy hairy pony,
Danny said to the dog as he scratched him behind the ears. He's an Irish wolfhound. Hey, wolf, Tara said. The dog cocked his head and kept his distance. Yep, even the Irish animals hated her. Definitely no room at the inn for you. Danny laughed. She felt herself relax a smidge. She tried to get close enough to pet it, but it skittered away, stopping after a few feet to give her a dirty look. In New York City, she was a sought-out interior designer. Here, she was a Yankee Doodle minus the dandy. What's his name? Danny looked startled. I don't know, he said. Johnny just always called him Hound. Oh, Tara said. He wasn't exactly the type to name things. He looked at Tara. Do you want to join us for that walk? She glanced at the plate where a scone as big as her head used to sit. Now crumbs were the only hard evidence. Yes, please. They rounded the building with Hound trotting behind, just in time to see Alana approaching. Her blonde hair gleaming in the sun, a backpack slung over her shoulder. Now that she knew the girl was a boxer, or wanted to be a boxer, Tara could see it in Alana's compact, bouncy gait, just like her father's. Tara smiled, but it was as if the world had distilled to a single focus, and Alana could only see Danny. Danny made the introductions. This is Alana. She lives above the warehouse. We've met, Tara said. She also works at the inn. Tara smiled. Alana blinked back. Where are you going? She asked Danny, apparently saving her lip muscles for him. We're taking Hound for a walk, Danny said. Grand. I'll just drop my bag upstairs and be with you in two shakes. Tara tried to squelch the negative feelings bubbling in her for the girl. She could feel the jealousy radiating off her. Sorry, Danny said quickly. We have to discuss business. Business? Alana's voice rose. What business would you have with her? This time her eyes flicked over Tara. Buying a gnome for your garden back home? I live in NYC, Tara said. I have a fire escape, but plants tend to shrivel and die on it. Alana blinked again. This is Johnny's niece, Danny said. Tara almost flinched. Instinct told her that the less this girl knew about her, the better. Is she now? Alana said. Then how is it she couldn't even identify his body? A look that could only be described as hatred came into her eyes. Even Hound whined. The wind seemed to pick up. Tara wanted to move. It was a horrible mistake, Tara said. I'm sorry if it personally caused you any trouble. Alana stared. She was probably picturing herself pummeling Tara in a boxing ring. Tara clenched her fists, wondering if she would be able to get in any counterpunches of her own. Probably not. Danny placed his hand on Tara's waist and gently pushed her forward. They followed the promenade, even though it wasn't always a straight line. Hound trotted way ahead, in his happy place, aware, it seemed, of every spot to stop and sniff. The places on the stone wall where seagulls would gather, and the location of rubbish bins where maybe a scrap or two may have missed the mark. In the distance, she could see the hill leading up to Johnny's cottage. A line of people snaked up it. She halted. Oh my God, she said, pointing. They're leaving flowers and crosses, Danny said. Paying their respects. They're ogling a crime scene. That too. Why are they allowed up there? I'm sure the guards have it organized. Tara wasn't so sure they did. She stopped along the stone wall. Hound settled a few feet away. He refused to get too close. But Tara could tell that he was also tracking her. It was kind of sweet. Do you have any idea where my uncle would have gone? Been wrecking my head, Danny said.
Except for business runs, he never went anywhere. He was literally born in that cottage. And, again, except for business trips, has never wandered outside this city. That was sad on its own, but in this case added to her growing worry that he was out there, hurt. Or worse, another victim. Friends, other family. Not outside Galway, that I'm aware. He looked Tara over. We didn't even know about you. A slight sense of shame washed over her, although she was hardly to blame for her mother and uncle's feud, whatever it was. There's a rumour he might have been dating the gypsy who lives in the caravan by the bay. Danny folded his arms. I'm not in the rumour business. Tara felt a flush of shame. She was just trying to figure out where he might have gone. Did he keep a record of all the places where he bought items? If he did, it should be in the office. But if you're thinking of checking every one of them out, it would take you years. Maybe I could check out his most recent clients. You? Why not me? Tara took a deep breath and took in the people passing by and the occasional restaurant by the sea. She wondered what she would have for lunch. Besides the fact that you've never met him? Tara bit her lip. Yes, besides that? The guards are looking for him. Don't you think you should leave it to them? Detective Sergeant Gable seems most interested in nailing my uncle as a murderer, and he didn't raise the alarm until he discovered the victim was Emmett Walsh. Danny nodded. He's a very wealthy man, he flinched. Was a very wealthy man. That's my point. Does that mean his life was worth more than a poor man's? Of course not, Danny said. But there will be more media coverage because of it, which puts more pressure on the guards to solve it quickly. I didn't make the world the way it is. Her uncle was in deep trouble. No wonder he was in hiding. Maybe he didn't trust the guards to find the real killer. Or maybe he was guilty. It seems odd that a very wealthy man was this upset over a cast iron pig. Before working at Irish Revivals, I would have agreed with you. And after? These collectors get insane, I told you. Emmett was obsessed with this Japanese princess that supposedly once owned the pig. Bit of a tall tale, if you ask me. The scent of curry wafted in the air, and Tara clocked the restaurant, storing it away as a possibility for later. What else can you tell me about Emmett? He's a local character, made his money off insurance and then some tech investments. He lived in a limestone mansion just outside the city. He was known to call it a castle, although it's a relatively new build, so he was exaggerating there. Is he married? His family lives in England, I believe. The castle in Ireland seems to be his bachelor pad. That's how he played it. I can only assume he was having marital difficulties. You said his house is about 40 minutes from here? Most likely Emmett had driven here for his meeting with Johnny. Had the guards located his car? Danny's eyes slid over to her, and, in step, they started walking again. I'm sure the police are going to have it covered, he said. I wouldn't get too involved. His tone was gentle, but also carried a warning. I know it's crazy. I've never met him. I may not even like him. My mother must have had her reasons for not speaking to him. But he's still the only family I have left. And I don't think he's going to be treated fairly by the guards. So your plan is to make it worse by trespassing on the murder victim's property? It sounded bad when he put it that way. I'm just thinking through my options. Maybe stick to the weather, music, and the crack. Crack. Tara smiled at the Irish word for fun. Got it. They reached a natural end to the cobblestone, where land took over and in the distance a row of houses framed the view. They turned and headed back in the direction of the warehouse. Hound followed without a fuss. "What do you know about Rose?"
"Rose?
The fortune teller." Danny stopped abruptly, and Tara had to swerve so that she wouldn't plough into him. "I'm not asking you to engage in idle gossip, just the facts."
"I might have underestimated you."
"How so?"
"You've learned a great deal in a short amount of time."
Johnny was obsessed with that woman.
Obsessed?
I got the feeling he was sweet on her. I don't know if they were romantically involved or not. I worry she was taking advantage of him.
Taking advantage? How?
He was spending a ton of money on her predictions, and they were all terrible. Doomsday stuff. He stopped and put his hand on Tara's arm. "She's a charlatan. I'm not joking. Stay away from her, especially." "Although," Tara said. She left it hanging.
"Yes?"
"Isn't that what happened at the cottage? Kind of in the doomsday territory?"
"Are you saying she predicted it?"
"Either that or she caused it.
She's either a psychic or a murderer. Is that what you're saying?"
"I must sound like another gossip. That's not my intention. She had a few doomsday predictions for me too." They were within a few feet of the salvage mill. Hound took off. Tara watched him go, then turned to Danny.
"I'll mind him for now," he said. "He wanders from the cottage to the mill. I'll make sure he has his food and water."
"Thank you."
"What would you like to do now? Go back to the inn or go through Johnny's office?"
"Have the guards been through it?"
"Not yet."
Tara sighed. Danny had a point about her not getting in the way of an official investigation. Besides, what were addresses of past employees going to do anyway? She didn't have a car here, and even if she did, she wasn't an avid driver. She grew up in New York City, where she didn't get much practice driving. There was no way she was going to learn to drive on the other side of the road. And didn't they all drive a stick here? She only knew how to drive an automatic, and even then she feared for everyone else on the road. "I think I need to go back to the inn and lie down." Danny winked.
"Those scones will do that to you. Come on, I'll walk with you."
They fell into a comfortable silence as they headed for the heart of the city. Morning workers were out, going to and from their jobs. Mothers pushed baby strollers. Shoppers handled bulging bags. A few young people were still out from the night before, leaning against buildings smoking cigarettes, staggering down the path or sleeping it off on the sidewalk. Music filtered through the air along with the smell of baked goods and ale, all mixed with the sea air. Galway was a drug, and Tara was addicted. When they reached the inn, Danny put his hand on her arm, stopping her before she went inside.
"I think we should keep Irish Revivals open," Danny said. "I'm happy to run it until Johnny is back."
"That's very nice of you," Tara said. "It's not just nice. I wanted to be more involved with the business. I have ideas for expanding. I even told Johnny he should open a smaller shop in town, sell to tourists."
"That sounds like a great idea."
She meant it too. The mill was so large it was overwhelming. But in a smaller space, she could imagine picking and choosing the items and staging them for optimal viewing. Her hands suddenly itched to work. It had been weeks since she created a vision board. In her head, she was already creating one for this retail shop.
"If only Johnny had seen it that way," Danny said, his voice filled with regret.
"He didn't like the idea of a shop?"
"You'll find the older generation in Ireland is averse to change."
"Yet you're stepping up to help him now."
"We might have had our disagreements, but if we don't keep it open, he's going to have nothing when he returns." Meaning Ben Kelly might swoop in and try take it over?
Jesus, Donnie said. You know everything.
Only a few things.
What do you think of Ben Kelly?
He's not someone I'd mess with. Was a boxer in his day. Still fierce.
He put his hands in his pockets.
It gets a little more dramatic.
Go on.
Alana accused Johnny of leering at her.
Leering? Now her uncle was a pervert?
Was he?
I never saw it, and I told her da that. But Johnny was erratic lately. I'm not calling her a liar either.
Why is she living above the mill?
Danny shrugged.
She's an adult now. Wanted her independence, I suppose. She's going to cookery school in Galway. That pleases her father.
You think that's the real reason? Tara asked. She had a feeling she was looking at the real reason.
Alana definitely had a crush on Danny.
Danny frowned.
What are you on about?
Sorry, nothing. Just curious.
She had to watch herself. For all she knew, Danny had a crush on Alana as well.
Danny laughed softly.
Johnny thought that Ben Kelly wanted her to live up there so that she could torture Johnny. Make him think he was going crazy. Drive him out.
That's why he accused her of mucking about in the mill?
Supposedly Ben Kelly has been cozying up with the city planners. It isn't out of the realm of possibility that Alana was doing a bit of spying.
Then why let her stay?
Danny shrugged.
Keep your enemies close, I suppose.
And Johnny didn't want to live in the flat, so there's no use leaving it empty.
Where do you live?
In town.
She waited for more, but he didn't provide any additional details. For a second, she found herself wondering what his place looked like.
Do you think Johnny could have been telling the truth? Could Alana be a thief?
What would a young girl want with rusty old items?
He sounded defensive.
Once again, she wondered if the crush was mutual. Tara decided to drop it for now.
How can I help?
When are you going home?
Tara sighed, her agitation bubbling to the surface.
Maybe I'm not.
Pardon?
Everyone keeps asking me that. I'm starting to feel I'm not welcome.
I didn't mean that at all. I didn't know what you have at home. A family? A job?
What could she say?
Her mother was dead. She never met her father. And she divorced shortly after her only son died falling from a jungle gym. She wasn't going to be an open book. Not around here.
I work freelance. I can afford to take a long break.
His eyes were pinned on her as if he knew she was holding back. But then he relaxed and flashed her a smile.
Grand. I want to help at the mill.
His smile evaporated. That's not necessary.
It's not a request.
And what experience do you have in sourcing, selling, or organizing architectural items? A clip of disdain was obvious in his voice.
I'm an interior designer.
Okay. I went to Parsons School of Design. I've been buying items and staging apartments and businesses in New York City for the past 10 years.
Look, you don't need to impress me.
Ditto. It came out harsh. Danny flinched.
You asked if I had any experience.
She tried to sound calmer, but the damage was done.
That I did.
He held his hand out for a shake.
It's your business. I'm just the employee.
I didn't mean it like that. Tara played along with the handshake. She held her hand for a moment, then let it go. She offered a genuine smile.
I'll be there bright and early tomorrow morning.
Danny started to walk away.
Not too bright, he said over his shoulder. And definitely not too early. She watched him until he was out of sight. She felt eyes on her and looked up to find Grace Quinn leaning out of the top window watching her. She suddenly had a very good idea why her mother left and had never come back. Forget smiling. Around here, Irish eyes were prying. Chapter 8. In the morning, Tara discovered Danny had dropped keys off to her at the inn, solidifying her theory that he didn't like to roll out of bed until the sun had been up a good while. Years of working for the corporate world in New York had made a morning person out of her. She opened the mill, then closed, and locked the door behind her. She'd let Danny deal with potential customers. She wasn't in a position to help any of them, just yet. She headed straight for the tiny office. There was a desk and chair, a file cabinet, and stacked cardboard boxes. In the center drawer, she found a black notebook with notations about customers and sales. Perfect. Maybe there was a clue in here somewhere as to where her uncle was hiding. But if he was innocent, why was he hiding? That was the one thought she couldn't get out of her head. Maybe he had witnessed the murder. Why not go to the guards? Maybe he was getting senile. Or maybe he too had been a victim, and the last option was the worst. He may not be hiding. He may be dead. She didn't want to work in the cramped office, so she took his appointment book and a notepad out to the patio. It was cool in the mornings and she wrapped her cardigan around her. A boat horn sounded in the distance, and the fresh air made it easier to think. What would her life have been like had she grown up here? Who would she have become? They could have at least spent their holidays in Ireland, Christmas and summer. She could have brought Thomas here. She did that too often. Carved new memories of her son out of the blank spaces. What might have been? She had already imagined him here with her, and had even advanced his age. He would have been 6. What did 6-year-olds act like? He probably would have loved Hound, and the boats rocking on the bay, and the lively street performers. Pancakes with faces for breakfast. The park after, his hands sticky with syrup. She couldn't have changed it, could she? Her fate? It wasn't Gabriel's fault for taking their son to the park. The jungle gym was too high, his little hand was too sweaty, the drop too sudden. If she'd been there, would she have thought to dry his hands off? Would she have been standing just below him just in case, instead of 5 feet away chatting with Judy Bell? Stop it. Gabriel had tortured himself enough. She had tortured herself enough. And the vicious replays did nothing but threaten to swallow her whole. She was grateful when Hound wandered over and got her mind off the past. He stood far enough away that she couldn't touch him, but close enough for her to know he wanted her attention. "Hey," she said. "Good morning." He whined, then turned and trotted around the side of the mill. A few seconds later, he poked his head out from the side of the building. Was he expecting her to follow? She approached him, hoping to sneak in a pet. Instead, she smelled paint. She soon saw why. Across the building, in large, sloppy black letters, was a painted message. "Go home, Yankee." She glanced at the hound. He was sitting up straight, tongue hanging out, happy to show her the writing on the wall. She was beginning to wonder if she should add him to the suspect list. Tara called the guards from Johnny's office. No one was available to speak with her, so she left a message. She found Hound wandering near an empty food bowl on the patio. A quick search turned up dog food in a closet near the patio. She fed him, and he even let her sneak a pet. She wondered if he missed Johnny, or had he been a witness?
If only Hound could speak. She should take a picture of the side of the building. She retrieved her phone from her purse and took several shots. The smell of paint hung in the air. At least it isn't blood. She didn't know what to do with herself, and she was keyed up now, so she went inside Johnny's office. For a second, she just sat in his chair in front of his desk and wondered what the man was like. She finally opened his appointment book and flipped to the latest entry. It was dated a week before she arrived, which meant approximately a week before Johnny disappeared. Wait, everyone was just assuming Johnny disappeared at the exact same time that Emmett was murdered, but what if he had been long gone? What if his disappearance was unrelated to Emmett's murder? No, that couldn't be. Danny said he came by recently to pick up his earnings. Unless he was lying. She focused on the entries. Nuns Island Experimental Theatre, Carrigmurray, Cookery, Talk to A's Instructor, Tattoo Shop, Rose, Inishmore, Talk to D. Several folks had already mentioned Carrig and his experimental theatre. He must be popular around here. She glanced at the second item. Didn't Grace and Danny say that Alana was going to cookery school? It stuck in Tara's mind because of the phrasing. Americans would have said she was studying to be a chef or going to cooking classes. Cookery was the Irish way of phrasing it. Did the A stand for Alana? Why on earth would Johnny Meehan want to speak with her instructor? Had he spoken with the instructor? Did Alana know about it? Tattoo shop. Rose. Did this have something to do with the fortune teller? Or was Johnny going to get a tattoo of a rose? From her studies of Ireland, Tara knew Inishmore was one of the Aran Islands. She'd planned on taking a sightseeing trip there before going home. Who was Dee? Did it stand for Danny? Tara headed back outside and made her way around to the side of the building. Did Alana paint this message? Or her father? Tara glanced at the second floor. All she could see of Alana's flat was a window, but the shade was pulled down tight. Alana could have slipped down in the middle of the night or the crack of dawn to paint the message. This side of the building was up against a small wooded area and the bay. The only witnesses would be the gulls circling overhead, or the swans gliding on the bay. And if it wasn't Alana, then Johnny was at least right about one thing. Someone was mucking about the mill at night. Alana shouldn't be living up there alone. Tara was going to have to make sure a security system was installed right away. Tara entered the mill and took the stairs going up to the second floor, where there was nothing but a single door. She knocked. No sound came from within. Her hand hovered over the knob. She couldn't just open it. She knocked again. Alana? She was probably at school. Tara wished she had the key and a good excuse to enter. Tara jogged back down the steps and stood wondering what her next moves should be. She was going to have to pay Gypsy Rose another visit. Ask the sorceress if she knew where they could find Johnny Meehan. See how good her psychic powers really were. She turned the corner to go back to Johnny's office when there came a rap on the front door. She opened it to find Detective Sergeant Gable and a female guard waiting. That was fast, Tara said. She wasn't even sure if they were going to get her message. Detective Sergeant Gable handed her a key. We were just finishing with the cottage. Tara stared at the key. What's this? The key to your uncle's cottage. You're going to need to hire someone. He handed her a business card. It was for a crime scene cleanup company. She shuddered. Show me. She led the guards to the side of the building. There was a moment of silence as they all took it in. Gable folded his arms across his chest. Making friends already. Do you recognize the handwriting? Tara joked. She was treated with puzzled looks. Didn't they get it?
She thought the Irish invented sarcasm. It went so well with Guinness. "It's not bad advice," Gable said, flashing a smile. "You told me not to leave town," Tara replied. "So I did." He instructed the other guard to photograph the side of the building. "Have you found any cans of paint, brushes, the like?" "No," Tara said. "But I didn't think to look." "I'll give a quick search with your permission." "By all means." She followed him as he began to walk around the building. "What about the cottage? Did you find the murder weapon? Fingerprints? Signs of a struggle?" She slammed into him. Darn it. She hadn't realized he'd come to a stop. He was a solid man. "Who are you?" he said. "Feckin' Nancy Drew? I just want to find my uncle. And whoever did this. Are you saying that you think the murderer is threatening you now? I'm just asking you to consider the possibility my uncle might be innocent. What if he's a victim too? I'll keep that in mind." She sighed and stopped following him. She waited by the front door until they were finished, so that she could lock up. He told her he didn't find any paint cans or brushes. "Do you want me to look inside?" "I've been through the mill several times," she said. "But I'll let you know if I find anything." He suggested she get a security system. She nodded her agreement. "If your uncle tries to contact you in any way, you need to call us. Tell me you understand." "Of course," Tara said. He eyed her. She kept silent. He told her she could pick up a copy of the report from the Garda office. She thanked them politely, knowing it was too late to sway them. If her uncle was innocent, he had no one to fight for him but her. If he was guilty, she would turn him in herself. Hound followed her to the cottage. This time the door was closed. Footprints trampled the ground, and remnants of crime scene tape hung from the door like tinsel left long after the Christmas tree has been dragged out. Would Johnny even want to live in this cottage when he returned? Such a small cottage. She couldn't imagine staying inside after someone had been murdered. She could barely bring herself to enter. She opened the door but didn't step inside right away. It couldn't hurt to let fresh air in. Maybe she could redecorate it, breathe some peace and new life into it. She could start with a vision board. It would help her focus. She was jittery when she wasn't designing. She made a mental note to look for an art shop in town so she could buy some canvases and materials, imagining a cottage makeover. Of course, she wouldn't make any major changes while her uncle was still missing, but the activity alone would be relaxing. She heard a whine and turned to see Hound standing a few feet away. He wouldn't come any closer. She got the feeling he was on edge. "You were here," she said. "Poor thing." She entered the cottage, stepping over the blood in the entry, then scanned the interior. What was she doing here? Gable was right. She needed to hire the crime scene cleanup crew. She didn't have it in her to do this. She stared at her name on the wall. Had Emmett Walsh done that? How was that possible? Somehow, someone knew she was coming. Tara couldn't imagine who or how, but the writing was literally on the wall. And why were all the letters at different heights? It was probably the designer in her imagined picking up on the writings of a dying man. Still, it was odd, just like the typed note. She glanced at the sofa and coffee table, the small kitchen table. The cottage was tidy. Dishes were neatly stacked in the drying rack.
Looked like a lot of dishes for a single man. Had he recently had a guest over? Perhaps Rose? If there had been any clues, the guards would already have them as evidence. She took a photo of her name on the wall and hurried out. Hound was waiting for her down the path. He followed her back to the warehouse. She found Danny on the side of the building, power spraying the graffiti off the stone facade with a hose he must have rented for the occasion. "You don't have to do that," she said. "I checked with the station," Danny yelled over the water. "They've documented it. No need for it to stay a second longer." "Thank you." "This isn't the spirit of Galway. I'm sorry. I didn't even realize it was about me at first." Danny laughed. "Did you not? I don't think of myself as a Yankee," Tara said. He tilted his head in confusion. This was one cultural chasm she would have to leave yawning open for now. She had bigger things to worry about than the fact that one silly song hundreds of years ago forever cemented Americans as Yankee Doodle Dandies. "I just came from the cottage." "And?" He shut off the spray and stepped back. She handed him the business card for the cleaning crew. Her look must have conveyed it all, for Danny nodded and tucked the card in the pocket of his jeans. "I'll take care of it." "Are you sure?" "Absolutely." "I was thinking of giving it a makeover," Tara said. "When Johnny returns, it will need everything, including new floors." "I happen to be handy," Danny said. "If you pick out the materials, I can lay the floor." "I'll pay you."
"Consider me hired."
"The detective also suggested we get a security system for the mill." Danny nodded. "I've been saying that to Johnny for ages."
"Can you set it up?" A look of worry crossed his face.
"Johnny won't be happy about it if he returns." He caught himself. "When he returns."
"I'll take responsibility," Tara said.
"Grace said the business also belonged to my mother."
Danny took this in stride.
"I'll see to it."
He was a good employee, but someone had been mucking about the mill, and someone had killed one of their wealthiest clients. Was there any connection?
"Did my uncle ever mention my name to you?" Danny frowned.
"Nope. Why?"
She hesitated. Besides her, only the guards knew about the message in the cottage, although soon the cleanup crew would know.
"I just wondered," she thought of the appointment book. "When you're finished, I'd like to take you to lunch. Ask you about a few items in Johnny's appointment book."
"Well then," Danny said, flashing a smile, "I'll try to not be too flattered."
They went to one of Danny's favorite restaurants by the bay. The outside was made of stone and wood, the window trim and door painted a vibrant green. The interior resembled a sparse beach house, white walls with blue trim at the top, rustic wooden floors and matching tables, and aside from a few potted trees and seafaring photographs on the wall, the main attraction was out the large windows, a front row seat to the bay. Once they were served, they fell into a comfortable silence. Tara was too in love with her fish and chips to speak. He watched her with an amused smile.
"So," she said when there wasn't a crumb left on her plate, "I heard you're a ladies' man."
A surprised look flashed across his handsome face. It was fun to see.
"Now who would say a thing like that?"
His tone was playful, but she could see a pinch of concern behind his attentive eyes.
"Ah, just everyone I've met who knows you."
"Bachelors aren't trusted in Ireland. If we don't settle down, have a wife, two young ones, then we must be trouble. I would think a single independent American woman like you would get me."
"I'm not saying you have to be married with kids," Tara said.
"As long as I'm looking for one, is that it?"
There was a bite lurking underneath his smile. She felt as if she had lost control of this conversation.
I was just teasing. You were passing on what you've heard. Don't be so quick to believe everything you hear. Noted. What about you? Where are your husband and kids? She should have thought this through. The pain of losing Thomas sliced through her, condensing 3 years into 3 minutes. Before she could stop them, tears were pulling in her eyes. She loathed crying in public. Danny registered it all quickly. Don't mind me, he said. I'm only messing. What did you find in Johnny's office? She welcomed the change of subject and slid the appointment book over to him. She wiped her eyes while he buried his face in the appointment book and pretended not to notice. Look at the last entry. What can you tell me? Danny took his time. He tapped the first item. Nuns Island Experimental Theatre. Nuns Island, Tara said. That's a neighbourhood? Yes, just like Salt Hill, all in this area. Fun name, why is it called that? Just a bad habit. It took her a moment to realise it was a joke. Then she laughed, and so did Danny. She liked the wrinkles around his eyes when he did. Back in the day, there were nuns all right. The Order of Poor Clare Nuns. They took refuge here during troubling times. Do you know why this theatre is on the list? I think Carrick was looking for a prop for his current play. You'll have to ask him whether he got it or not. Tara made a note. And the next one? Danny frowned at the cookery instructor entry. I have no idea. Do you think he's talking about Alana? Why in the world would he want to talk to her cookery instructor? Do you know the name of her school? Danny stared at her. The Galway Cookery School? Tara laughed. Okay, I will look them up. What do you care? Danny asked. His tone had shifted, just like the Irish winds across the bay. Excuse me? You've never even visited the man. Not once. Tara set her jaw. That wasn't her. That was her mother. But that was private family business. She wasn't going to say anything negative about her mother to this man. He didn't know her. He didn't know a single thing about her. She stood and reached for her purse. I need some air. She started to fumble for her money when Danny's hand shot out, stopping her. It's on me. Tara shook her head. I asked you to lunch. It's on me. Danny looked horrified. You're the guest here. She sighed. Go on, get some air. I'll be out in 2 shakes, he said. Tara was standing on the footpath, soothing herself, watching boats bobbing on the water, when Danny came up behind her. I'm sorry. She took a deep breath, then let it out. I'm sorry too. You've nothing to be sorry for. You're not wrong, though. She wished he was. She wished her mother and Johnny had remained close. She wished she knew the man who was her mother's brother. She wished her son was alive and human beings couldn't kill each other. That was the problem with wishing. Once one started, it was impossible to stop. I should probably just go home. Sure, look it. I didn't mean to suggest you were responsible for your mother and Johnny's falling out. Danny was staring at her again, an intense focus she hadn't experienced in a long time. She didn't know she would ever feel anything like this again. She didn't know if she wanted to. Grace's warning floated in front of her. A player. Watch yourself. Did he ever say why he and my mother fell out? She made a point of not looking at him. I know Johnny was a man in a lot of pain. I don't know for sure if it had anything to do with you and your mother. She knew the pain. She'd seen it on her mother's face nearly every day of her life. Not constant. Her mother could put on a mask and keep it there longer than anyone she knew. But once in a while it would slip. And for a second, not even her mother could hide the emotion carved into her face. Grief. Danny edged closer. You've never mentioned your father. Is he an Irishman too?
I don't know, Tara said. My mother said she wanted to write virgin birth on my birth certificate. She would never tell me his name.
Tara always assumed the identity of her father was another reason her pregnant, unwed mother had fled prying Irish eyes.
Ah, the Irish, Danny said as if reading her mind. They do like their secrets.
Indeed, and some of them could kill.
Chapter 9. Everyone, especially Danny, warned Tara not to pay a visit to Ben Kelly. So Tara moved him to the top of her list. She wanted to know more about this boxing ring of his and why he had been harassing her uncle over the mill. When she had met Ben Kelly at O'Doul's, he had warned her to stay away from Johnny and his cottage. Was that because he knew exactly what or who she would find there? She headed for the pub in the afternoon. She needed the break, anyway. She had gone through all the inventory in the warehouse, but she could find neither a cast iron pig nor a harp. She had even popped upstairs to see if Alana would let her in, so she could scope out her flat, and at the same time see if Alana had been stealing from the shop. But once again, there was no answer, and her repeated knocks were met with dead air. At least she could sit and have a pint, if nothing else. The same grandfatherly bartender was wiping down the counter at the old men's bar, and for all she knew it was the same old men sitting on the same old leather stools. But this time, they were all talking when she walked in, and she lingered by the doorway listening. The lilts and cadences of their voices were like a melody she wanted to lose herself in, until she started to comprehend what they were actually saying.
"He done it, of course he did," one of the men said. "I told you he wasn't right in the head."
"But why would he just kill a rich man and get nothing out of it?"
the bartender said.
"Maybe he did. Maybe that's why he ran off," a voice replied.
The bartender wasn't buying it.
"Johnny wasn't easily rattled. He might not have been right in the head, but did we ever see him lose his temper? He was more likely to take a nap than deliver a box to anyone's head."
Tara clenched her fists. Everyone knew Emmett Walsh had been hit over the head. The guards were being too careless with the details of the case. She stepped in farther, and the men noticed her at the same time. It fell silent at once, and all eyes were on her.
"Guinness, please," she said to the bartender. He pointed at her.
"It's you."
Men scooched their stools in closer.
"You found Emmett, did you now?" another called out.
"You shouldn't have said you found Johnny. You should have just said you found a man,"
yet another reprimanded.
"I'll leave her be,"
the bartender said, as he prepared her Guinness. He nodded to her.
"Sorry, but it's been a right old shock."
"I'm sorry too. I've never met my uncle. I had no idea it wasn't him."
"It's not your fault, pet,"
the bartender said, sliding her the pint. She glanced around, but the muscular, angry boxer was not among the customers. Asking about him by name would bring a world of scrutiny. She would finish her pint, see what she could learn, and then head to the address she'd Googled for Ben Kelly. He already had a location where lads took boxing lessons. She would just show up. It took the men a while, but they finally relaxed around her. One pint turned into three. She kept trying to pay for rounds, which was apparently how it worked here, but someone always beat her to it. She had pints lined up, more than she could drink. She begged the bartender to stop and insisted she pay for a round for the others. He finally got the message and she felt some relief when he accepted her money. Tara decided it was now or never.
I was hoping to find Ben Kelly here.
He's probably at his ring, the bartender said.
Will you be needing another napkin, will you? At first she had no idea why the bartender was asking that, but then she realised he was offering to draw her another map. Yes, please, she watched as he sketched. What's your name?
I'm Paul, love.
Tara, nice to meet you. He slid the napkin over to her. The Ring of Kelly. Cute. A play on the Ring of Kerry. Situated on the southeast coast of Ireland, another place she hoped to visit one day. The address of Ben Kelly's boxing ring wasn't familiar to her, but the map was clear. Paul gestured to the napkin.
Do you have a car, love?
No, she said. Do you want me to call you a Joe Maxi? What? He winked. Sorry.
A taxi cab.
Yes, please. He nodded and dialed. One will be here in about 20 minutes. Do you fancy another pint? No, thank you, but buy the lads around on me. She handed over payment. She wondered how many pints until they stopped gossiping about her. Bottomless was probably the answer. She thanked him, hopped off her stool, and headed outside to wait for her Joe Maxi. He drove like he just got his license the day before, and he might have, given his youthful glow. He seemed to know every dip in the road, but instead of avoiding them, he was accelerating. And by the third time the taxi bounced and she almost hit her head, she was forced to yell at him to slow down. He did, but not without a sunglasses stare through the rear-view mirror. I'm in no hurry, Tara said as cheerfully as she could. I'd rather live. Instead of answering, he turned the music on, a loud, thumping beat. They were outside the city, and she had been dizzied by at least 3 roundabouts. But finally, he was pulling up at a storefront. On one side of the building, there were cows grazing, and on the other side of the building, there were cows grazing. Tara couldn't see around the back, but she had a feeling she'd find cows grazing. The squat cement building was half the size of the mill. She was starting to see why Ben Kelly wanted a new location. The Ring of Kelly sign flashed neon green. The taxi driver screeched to a halt, and the aspiring race car driver immediately lit a cigarette. His head bobbed to the pounding noise torturing her from the stereo. She sighed, paid him, and nearly hurled herself out of the car. He screeched away, leaving behind a cloud of dust. It was only then that she realized the parking lot was devoid of cars, and the windows were shuttered and dark. A rusty red bicycle leaned against the building like it just couldn't keep going. She knew how it felt. Maybe she should have listened to Danny, or the men in the pub, or the guards. Maybe she should just start listening to everyone. Being stubborn was not always an admirable trait. Maybe she'd walk back. No, she'd never be able to figure out how to get there on foot. For all she knew, the cheeky driver had gone around the same roundabout each time. The skies were grey and hanging low. Just as she was about to call for another taxi, she heard a soft whoop, whoop, whoop from inside the ring. She tried the door. It swung open. The stench of sweat and gym socks mixed with strong cleaning fluid hit her as she entered. A large ring took up most of the space, and a few punching bags hung from the ceiling, dropped low enough to hit. Alana was at one of the punching bags, laying into it as if it were her mortal enemy. Tara wasn't surprised to see she was good. Despite her father's objections, she had obviously been training right alongside all the men. Step, step, punch, punch, punch. Bounce, bounce, bounce. Tara immediately wanted to join in. Hitting something would feel extremely good. The door slammed shut behind her. Alana stopped. What are you doing here? So much for pleasantries. I was hoping to find your father in, Tara said. She kept her voice bright. You haven't. She resumed punching. Sorry, I haven't...
What?
Found him in,
Alana said without missing a step or a punch. Tara reached in her purse and grabbed her small notepad and pen.
Do you know when he'll be back?
Nope.
I've knocked on the door to your flat several times,
Tara said.
Why?
Alana asked.
Someone spray-painted the side of the mill?
'Twasn't me.
Did you hear me knocking on your door?
Alana finally stopped bouncing and punching. Sweat dripped down her face. She quickly dabbed at it with a small towel draped around her neck.
I've been staying with my da.
So you haven't been to the mill in a few days?
Given that a murderer is running loose, he doesn't want me there.
Then he'll be happy to know I'm having a security system installed. I will need to get into your flat.
Can you give me a key? Or do you know where Johnny kept a key?
Alana stopped moving.
Why do you need to get in my flat?
In case the security team needs access.
You intend on spying on me in my own home, like?
Tara shook her head.
No, no. But they might need access for wiring and such.
Tara felt a bit of heat rush to her cheeks. It was true that she would love to get a look at the flat, but she didn't intend to use the key to break in. Do I?
Tell me when they're coming. I'll let them in myself.
Tara nodded, for she didn't have much ground to argue with that.
Danny is handling it. You can speak with him. Grant, anything else?
She put a boxing glove to her hip.
I heard your father was keen to buy the mill, move this establishment.
Tara looked around. It was kind of small for a boxing ring.
The mill would be a perfect location. Johnny was getting too old anyway. He didn't even like the job anymore. Anyone could see it.
When's the last time you spoke to Johnny? Alana ripped off the gloves and began stretching.
What's it to you?
Tara sighed and stared at her handwritten note to Ben Kelly. Where was she supposed to put it? To her left was a closed door. The word office was written on a piece of paper that had been tacked to the door. She didn't bring tape. Should she just slip it under the door? Give it to Alana? Had Alana driven here? Tara stood with her note, not sure what to do.
Any chance you're headed back to the mill? She said, finally.
No, Alana said through a stretch.
But if you need some wheels, the red bike out front is looking for a home.
Oh, Tara said. The bike looked as if it had spontaneously retired. But as long as it still worked, it would be safer than another speedy taxi driver mad to kill her.
Thanks.
Not a bother.
Where can I leave this note for your...